The world of construction is transforming before our eyes. How we design, plan, quantify, and build is changing day to day. But it's never been so easy to connect, share, and bring people together. Our industry is reshaping. So how do we develop relationships? How do we overcome our fears? How do we generate business? And how do we ultimately become the best version of ourselves?
This is Measured. I'm McDonaghy, and my guest today is...
Hi guys, this is McDonaghy, and this is another episode of Measured. Thank you for joining me. We are currently on episode 48, which is pretty crazy. We only started the podcast back in August, September last year, and we've tried pretty hard to put out two episodes every single week. So it's great that we're continuing to get so many people to listen. We're getting so many queries, and you know, the podcast is truly going sort of worldwide at the moment. So we have questions today from people from South Africa, the UK, and in Australia and New Zealand as well. So obviously the podcast always has a bit of a sort of quantity surveying and estimating swing to it. I think over the coming months, we're going to try pretty hard on bringing in more business leaders to the podcast. So keen to speak to those who come from, whether it be an entrepreneurial background within construction, whether it be in a leadership role. I think we can learn from so many different facets within the industry. So it's super important that we don't just interview quantity surveyors and estimators, that we're out there speaking to project managers who have maybe stepped into project director roles, or general managers who've decided to go out and start their own businesses. And we have a number of guests lined up who come from that type of background. So it's going to be pretty awesome to see how the podcast unravels and develops as the year goes on. But today we are going to answer some questions that I've put out a bit of a request to the LinkedIn community out there and asked you to submit some questions today. I think it's always important to shake up the podcast. You know, I don't want it to always be the same sort of pattern. I do want to give you some advice and market insight to what's happening at the moment. And so we're going to answer some of your questions. So the first question that we have here today is it easy to immigrate to Australia and find work? This is from Frank Coates in South Africa. So I would say that it's definitely not easy, but you can definitely do it. I would say right now, if you're someone who is living in the UK, Ireland, Europe, South Africa, wherever it might be, and you're looking to immigrate to Australia and you don't have permanent residency, I would seriously consider putting it off until the end of the year, towards the beginning of next year. There's going to be an absolute influx of people applying for jobs over the next sort of 6 to 12 months. Obviously, Europe and most of the world has experienced a really difficult time during COVID, and that's obviously put negative spins on things for a lot of people out there. But the reality of it is that Australia and New Zealand, you know, there's a real sort of brand going on with, you know, a bit of ego bashing and you know, thumping the chest that yes, we've done the best, but yes and no in many ways. But what I would suggest is that if you're someone considering making a move, use this time over the next 9 to 10 months to really get all of your ducks in a row. So as I said, it's very difficult to immigrate, but you can do it. So what you'll need to do initially is obviously speak to someone who is a registered visa or immigration consultant. You'll need to speak to someone with regards to getting your qualifications assessed before moving to Australia. So whether you've got a bachelor's degree in quantity surveying, construction management, you'll want to get your qualifications assessed by the AIQS or one of the project management authorities in Australia in order to be able to get that on your CV and get those points accumulated for your application process. The best way for immigrating to Australia and to how to get buy-in from most clients is by already having permanent residency. I know that's obviously really difficult, but the success stories that I've seen over the years, so I've lived in Australia and New Zealand for 5 years. And those who I've seen who have been successful, the ones that are actually have achieved PR status before even relocating. The reason being is that clients then know that you're serious about relocating. They know that they're not going to waste time. They know that they're not going to have to pay extra money to sponsor you. And you know that a lot of the time, you know, Australia is obviously fueled by migration, and clients will have been, you know, sick and tired of getting their fingers burnt with candidates who have moved from the UK or you know, wherever it might be, and you know they've sponsored them for 18k or 20k or whatever it might be, and then you know 6 months to 12 months down the line, you know, they move on to another company. So you need to really sort of consider all of these things. It's extremely challenging to get out here. I would say it's nigh on impossible for the next 6 to 12 months. But use the time to get all of your ducks in a row. So one thing that I would suggest is we get a lot of candidates coming to us from all over the world, you know, looking for assistance. What you'll need to remember is that when a client is going to have to sponsor you, it will cost anywhere in the region of 12 to 15, 18K to sponsor that person. That takes a long time. It's taking even longer now with COVID. It's probably increased by about 3 or 4 times the typical visa and processing time. So take that into consideration. You know, if it's normally 6 months, it could potentially be 18 months before you're getting anything back from the Australian Immigration Authority. So it's expensive for clients, but if you're going for a recruitment company, it's double expensive because the client will have to pay a recruitment fee as well. So take that into consideration. You know, obviously recruitment is my business and that's where I make all my money, but giving you some advice is get out there and actually reach out to clients directly. Otherwise, you know, if you wait for a year, if you're under 35, you know, you might be able to get out here on a work and holiday visa. You know, that's the way that I moved to New Zealand. The people that we sponsor within my business, that's how they have come out. It shows it's just a little bit easier for companies. They can get you out here on a work and holiday, they get you started working, see how you operate. And then after sort of 12 months, you know, things are going well, and then they can offer that sponsorship. So whether it's by getting over here by PR or it's by getting sponsored or if it's by coming through the work and holiday visa route, it is possible, but it is harder. So just to take that into consideration and use this time over the next six to nine to 12 months wisely, because it's going to be a massive demand coming to Australia in 12 to 18 months' time. Okay, so thanks for that question, Frank. So the next question that we have is from Melanie McAllister. She has asked, how do I transfer from the mining industry to the construction industry? I'm a project manager and would like to transition. So this is a pretty interesting question. Obviously, the mining industry and construction infrastructure, there's a lot of crossover. If you're looking to get into sort of construction and property, you know, you might find that's a little bit more difficult than to get into the likes of a civil or infrastructure contractor. There are a lot of businesses out there that specialize in mining and civil maintenance, civil infrastructure. You know, companies like Golder or companies like FKG, you know, they'll build large infrastructure on mining projects. So like if I was sort of trying to transition into a more sort of traditional contractor as opposed to a mining house or a mining operator, I would probably have a look at the civil contractors that are actually working on site, because they're probably most likely to be interested in taking you on board. Otherwise, you know, you could look at sort of reskilling or maybe upskilling yourself in many ways. You know, you could do that by taking certain courses. And I also think nowadays it's all about how you develop yourself as a brand. You know, if you're Melanie McAllister, you know, mining engineer, and that's who you are to everyone you know, then fair enough. But you know, people can do what they do as a day job, but be known for something else. You know, you see a lot of these people who are, you know, famous for Bitcoin or Forex trading or YouTube, or you know, putting on funny TikToks or whatever it might be. Like, there's so many of these people that you see online who, you know, are super Insta famous or TikTok famous, and you actually work as a quantity surveyor or CA or project engineer, or you're someone who works in a coffee shop, you know. But I think, you know, what are you known for, you know, and start to try and become known for construction of property. You know, if you're a mining engineer or working in the mining industry, you know, start to look at how mining and construction are related. What are the trends? What are the skill shortages? What skill shortage is it? Engineering, you know, is that a skill shortage? That's also the talent pool isn't there within construction as well. So try and make those trends and try and to make those correlations. And you know, if you're really keen on developing into something, that you'll find a way. You know, I remember an old girlfriend said that to me once. You know, she said, if you're really keen on doing something, then you'll find a way and you'll make it happen. So I think it's if you want to do something, you know, hard enough, you will find a way. And it's all about what you're known for, and you can become known for something else very, very easily. You know, you've got a very powerful handheld device. You've got the phone there that can, you know, take you into many different social networks, whether it's Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook. You could start writing blogs. You could start doing so much on that side. So if you want it, you'll make it happen. So the third question that we have today is from Antonia Brown. She has asked, how do we address the skill shortage in Australia? So obviously it's been a really challenging year over the last 12 months for most companies. So right now, I would say that companies are experiencing a lot of demand across the board. You know, whether that's commercial construction and you're focused on whether that's fit outs or new builds, or whether you're a company that specializes in social infrastructure like health, education, defense, or whether you're a contractor working on major roads or rail projects, there seems to be considerable demand across the board. Now, if we look at 12 months ago, 23rd of March, you know, probably one of the bleakest times in my working career, it was the complete opposite. There was no demand. Everyone had closed shop. You know, redundancies were being made all around the place. You know, the JobKeeper scheme came in, and you know, pretty soon after that. But you know, it was pretty much hold on to what you can and get rid of anything that you know is not going to make you any revenue over the next sort of 3 to 6 months. But now the test of time has prevailed, and we've seen with what the government, the state governments, the federal government has been able to do. They've shut down the borders. They've largely speaking kept Australia safe from COVID, which has increased confidence across the board. Now we're seeing huge funding going into major infrastructure projects, you know, whether that's TMR, road, rail, whether that's mining, which seems to be booming at the moment. Western Australia has clicked back into gear and is going crazy again. And we're seeing that across multiple states. But the main thing that we're struggling with now is that there hasn't been any overseas migration for nearly 12 months. So with a country that heavily relies on migration, you know, Australia's got one of the largest landmass in the entire world. There's only 25 million people. And put that into consideration, I think there's like nearly 20 million people in New York and there's 19 million people in London. You know, there's 25 million people in all of Australia, you know. So Australia is fueled on migration. It's fueled on people coming from the UK, Asia, even New Zealand, you know, everywhere, all over the world. The demand is always high for skilled migrants, you know, from healthcare right through to construction, through to IT. There hasn't been any migrants come into Australia for 12 months, which is absolutely insane to think about. What do we do? You know, how do we address that? It's something that I've been quite vocal on over the last couple of days on LinkedIn, is that, you know, we are seeing a bit of a trend on outsourcing pre-construction services to overseas locations. You know, I suppose you can get cheap labor in some, you know, underdeveloped countries like the Philippines, like India. You know, you can jump on Upwork or Freelancer and find someone to employ for $5 an hour and it can be quite useful in many respects. But, you know, we're seeing that trend. There's more talk about that at the moment. But my biggest feeling within the industry is that there's a certain psyche within Australia and New Zealand, and it's strange, you know, that the fact that you have to have Australian or Kiwi experience to be good enough to work on projects. So typically we'll get, I'm going to be sort of fair enough in saying it's probably 70 to 80% of our clients will say that we're not interested in anyone who hasn't worked here before. And I would say out of that 70 to 80% of those clients, I would say a good 40 to 50% of them are not even from Australia themselves, which blows my mind. You know, I'm speaking to Irish, English, Asian, Kiwi, it's project managers, construction managers, South African, whatever it might be. And they're telling me that they're only looking for someone with experience in Australia. It's irony that slaps me in the face every time. But saying that, I can semi-understand, you know, my feeling is that back in the day, people were paid to come to Australia. You know, my grandmother who recently passed away, God bless her, she was offered £10 to move to Australia, you know, so she was being offered money to move to Australia. So if you think about it, like if you think the amount of people that started, you know, rocking up to Australian shores over the last 50, 60, 70 years, it just would have been chaos, you know. So I imagine what has happened over time, you know, whether it's been the last, I've only been here a year and 8 months, but if it's been, you know, over the last 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, you know, where you've had hire a manager looking to hire a project manager or QS, and they've had 100 CVs sent to them, you know, the first thing you're probably going to say is, yeah, but how many of them have actually worked here before? Because I can't be bothered reading every single CV, or I can't be bothered, you know, actually speaking to every one of them directly. So just you know, let me look at the ones who've got this student experience. And I assume that's what's developed over time, because, you know, there's a slight differences in contracts, there's slight differences in procurement, slight differences in construction terminology, but there's not that much difference. You know, like you can say what you want, and I'm not an engineer or QS or whatever, but, you know, there's a reason why 50% of my clients are expats, you know, and I assume that the other 50% of them, and the majority of them are going to come from European settlers as well. So, you know, I don't think that there's going to be much difference in contract. Yes, there will be maybe 20, 30% that these people don't know. But, you know, if you've worked on major projects in the UK, Middle East, Asia, America, wherever it might be, there's not going to be that much difference. You know, buildings are buildings, bridges are bridges. But saying that, we'll always follow what our clients ask us, you know, they're asking us for something specific. They're paying us a fee. So we're going to go out and actually look for that person. But if I'm being honest, there are so many good people on the market living in Australia, using Australian dollars. Kids are in Australian schools who speak fluent English, who go to the AFL, who enjoy rugby league, you know, and don't get a chance. And it's extremely frustrating for me. You know, I've maybe used an example a couple of times before, but 6 months ago, I sent the same CV to a client, didn't get a response. 3 days later, I changed the name to an Australian sounding name and had an interview straight away. You know, and that is an unconscious bias if we've ever seen one. So there's a psyche that's developed over time, and I'm not bashing Australia here, and I'm certainly not bashing New Zealand either, but it's something that needs to be considered. You know, when I worked in Ireland for 5-6 years, and it was during the early stages of countries like Poland and Turkey being formalized into the European Union. And you know, I'd be working in an industrial construction recruitment agency, and it was all temp recruitment, and we'd have 17, 18 Polish guys rock up to the office and tell me that they're looking for a new job, and they'll do absolutely anything. And you know, I'd ring around 3, 4, 5 of my clients, and they would say, are they a good worker? Can they speak good English? You know, what have they done before? And they'd be given an opportunity. But here, for some reason, and maybe it's what I've spoken about previously, is that there is a bit of an unconscious bias that's developed. There is a bit of a, it's easier to employ an Australian. It's easier to employ someone who has an Australian experience. And that's going to kill the market long term. You know, like we're not going to see our clients be able to deliver projects on time, on budget, to spec, if they don't begin to start to speak to people, start to speak to proposed candidates. You know, I'm not saying go and hire someone with no experience. You know, bring in the most experienced person for the job. But if you've got someone there who's potentially going to cost you 30-40k less and is maybe only going to take, you know, 3-4 months to get up to scratch, and that person is going to become an unbelievable asset to your business, you know. And what you'll find is that someone else will train them up, someone else will develop them, and in 2 years time, you're going to be paying 20-30k more to hire that exact same person because you haven't done it. So someone becomes good looking when they're with someone else, you know, like, but if you actually sit and interview them and understand who they are, what they've done before, you might be pleasantly surprised. So it's a big thing that I'm going to be driving over the next 6 months, is start to speak to people who have the experience, regardless of where it is, regardless of what location. What does it matter? Get these people in front of you, speak to them, and you know, they're bright. They're not stupid, you know, they're chartered QSs, they're chartered engineers, they're guys and girls and guys sitting there who've, you know, studied and have more degrees than I've had hot dinners. You got to get out there and you've got to meet with them. And you know, this is what's going to move the economy forward. It's not going to be putting money into overseas accounts where those people are going to be spending their money in the UK or in Europe or in Asia and developing their economies. If you want to see them, if you want to see Australia grow and get out of the next sort of 12 to 18 months and be a shining symbol of hope, then you've got to go and actually meet people and offer them jobs who are spending money in Australia, who are putting their kids in Australian schools. That creates that domino effect, and you know, more schools will need refurbishments. You'll need more healthcare requirements. You know, we'll need more overseas nurses to come in. You know, this is where it all starts. Give people a chance, and that's something I'm super passionate about. So thank you, Antonia, for asking that question. Otherwise, we're on question 4. How do you get a job in Australia if nobody is willing to give you an experience? So this is maybe kind of going on the flip side of that one. So that was Unum Trava asked that question. So yeah, obviously extremely difficult. I've become friendly with people who I've tried to get jobs for over the last sort of 17, 18, 19 months. Yeah, it's heartbreaking at times. These people have, you know, families and aren't getting any chances because they've got a foreign sounding name or actually haven't got a the location Sydney after one of their job titles or on their CV, you know. So yeah, it becomes extremely difficult. But you know, as I said previously, if you want something hard enough, you'll manage a way to get it. So there are ways of getting jobs. I would say leave your ego to the side. First thing is forget about your ego. Get rid of it. You need to realize that you're not going to get anything for free. You know, it's a hard place to get yourself set up. So think about that. What can you do for a company for free? Put it that way. Start volunteering. Show that you can build your project capabilities. What I would say is start contacting companies directly. Don't go through your recruitment agency, because what you're doing then is you're expecting someone else to get you a job. You know, the responsibility is in your hands. If you've got a family, if you've got people to feed, people who are relying on you, you can't rely on anyone else. You know, I've seen my old man, you know, go through recruitment agencies in Ireland, and you know, he has his heart broken. It absolutely kills me every time I think about it. And people just not interested in helping him at all. And to be honest, sometimes I become too heavily invested in people, or it becomes completely uncommercial for me to do so. But the reality of it is, you can't help everyone, you know, and I can't help everyone. You've got to help yourself. You've got to go out and think outside the box. You know, you could make a list of 10 companies you want to work for, and you could send them a personal video, or you could go in and hand 10 CVs to the director directly. You know, I remember seeing a young chap when I worked in Auckland, and this guy had walked around and walked in and sent the CV into 70 companies, over 70 companies, South African lad. And tell you what, he got offered a job, and now he's on extremely good money, very, very good lifestyle. But he'd done the hard work, didn't expect anyone to give him a job, went out there, introduced himself. And I remember when he came in to me, he was always in the back of my mind, because you know, someone willing to rock up to an office and ring the bell, and never having spoken to anyone before in that business, and he introduces himself. He's very well presented. He's got his PR. You know, he's got everything there. He's got all of his qualifications in front of him. You know, and you know, I remember thinking, I need to do something with this guy. I need to do something. But by the time I'd been given, had something that's come up that I could maybe place him into, he had already received an offer. So. Why not? You know, if you're not willing to do it, then you don't want it hard enough. So also just try and do stuff that stands out of the box. You know, if you really want a job, even if there's three clients that you're really keen on working with, maybe they're close to your home or close to your kids' daycare or whatever it might be. Why not spend a bit of money to get a bit of money back? You know, maybe spend $100 and drop a case of beers into the team, or, you know, send in a bouquet of flowers, the HR manager, like, or whatever it might be. Think of something, you know, like buy a cheap phone, record 10 reasons why they need to hire you on the phone, and it's handed in to the receptionist and tell them to give it to the director. You know, I'm telling you right now, if you do that, you're going to have a lot of success. You can buy a cheap phone for about $50. So seriously, like, if you want something, you'll think of reasons and ways to do it. So whatever it takes, stand out. If you haven't got experience, that's not an excuse. You know, go and make opportunity for yourself. You know, nothing comes for free. So thanks, Unum, for sending that question in. Last question that we have here today is from Millie. I don't have a second name, so sorry about that, Millie. I'm from the UK and I've worked as a QS on site for more than 10 years. Will my experience be useful in Australia, or what direction should I go? So it's something that a lot of people from the UK or Ireland maybe just don't have enough knowledge on. So if you're a project QS, you know, if you're working for a contractor and you're working alongside a PM, and you know, you're looking after all the commercial aspects to your project, what you'll need to recognize that in Australia, that position doesn't exist. So there is a position which there is some common traits to it, and it's called the contracts administrator. Now, what I've typically experienced, and as I said, I'm not a QS, but what I've typically experienced is that people from the UK or Ireland or who have traditionally worked in that project QS role, they have found that role to be somewhat not belittling, but it certainly wouldn't be recognized as the same type of role that you had previously. You know, you would report into your project manager, and their project manager would be responsible for the delivery and all commercial elements of a project. You know, for people who have maybe been responsible for commercially managing $100 million projects, you know, they don't have that responsibility anymore. And essentially you're doing predominantly contract administration, contracts negotiation, and you're reporting in all findings to a PM. You know, it can be quite hard to grasp a lot of the time. So be wary of that. You know, if I was thinking, you know, I really want to kick all of my career out in Australia, and that's what you really want to do, you know, I would consider trying to get some project management experience before you leave. You know, like if you've actually been a PM, you know, the likelihood is that the project manager and that experience as QS is going to give you more opportunity in Australia, and the project manager calls all the shots here. You know, so there's also the PQS route as well. So there's similarities in that as well, but you'll see from previous shows that I've done before that there are big differences in just the type of work that you're doing for PQSs in Australia. You know, there's a lot of education that needs to go on within the market, within the industry, from the AIQS, from the RICS, on what, you know, a quantity surveyor can do for a business, whether that's, you know, the contracts, you know, is it arbitration, is it cost management, cost planning, is it risk management, is it dealing with troubleshooting particular projects, is it even an element of project management? You know, there's an education piece that needs to go on heavily within the industry, but what I would say is there are similarities. You know, it's pre-contract cost planning, post-contract cost management. It just depends on the type of projects you'll be working on, but the good thing is that there are heaps of opportunities on that side as well. So That rounds up our final question of this. So thanks for listening. What I would say is the market is heating up. If you are a QS right now, if you're an estimator, if you're a project manager, if you're seeking a move, seriously consider reaching out to us. We would really love to help. If you're someone in the UK or Ireland or South Africa or Asia or wherever it might be, certainly feel free to reach out and ask questions. What I'll say is it does take me a little bit longer to get back to all those questions because I do get so many of them. And that's the reason why I wanted to do this today. But market's heating up. Hopefully over the next 9 months, we'll start to see Australia open up ever so slightly. Hopefully we get this Kiwi and Australian bubble. Hopefully I can see my business partner back in New Zealand at some point. And hopefully the market continues to heaten up. But yep, it's a good time to be out there. Plenty of opportunity. If you want someone to represent you properly, professionally, let me know. Cheers, guys. Thank you so much for listening to Measured with me, Mick Donaghy. Our goal with this podcast is to create a community of construction professionals from a variety of backgrounds and experiences to develop, learn, and grow together. As a business, our aim with Frankel & Smith is to become the most respected pre-construction and quantity surveying recruitment agency in Australia within the next 5 years. Thereafter, our goal is to build a 100-year company that outlives us as owners, but lives on in the careers and legacy projects we recruit for. Listening to this podcast is being a small part of that journey, and we are forever thankful for your time. If you'd like to connect further with our ever-growing community, check out the Measured Facebook and LinkedIn pages. Thanks for listening to Measured. Catch you next time.